The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply. It's better.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5, WRCH, and 96.5 TIC. Our guest this morning is Dr. Elsa Nunez. She is the sixth president of Eastern Connecticut State University. She began her tenure in 2006 and is retiring July 1st of this year. Can't believe it. We're going to be spending time this morning looking back on her 18 years at Eastern. And I also want to share with everybody that I had the chance to work with Dr. Nunez between 2015 and 2018. So I'm pleased to mark this transition with you, Dr. Nunez. Good morning and welcome to the
show.
Good
morning, Morgan. It's an honor and a privilege to be on with you. Thank you.
And it was 10 years ago we did our first interview on the radio
and
on a different station.
And you were good then and you're good now.
We haven't done the full show yet, so I'll let you judge at the end, okay?
Okay, that's fair.
Dr. Nunez, you have been at Eastern for 18 years, and people know that aspect of you, but I know a different side of you, one that started when you were growing up in poverty in Puerto Rico, and you've worked from there all the way up to this level. Some might say that that's unbelievable, but could you talk about your journey from, as you called it once, from the projects to the campus?
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody has a story, and my story goes back to my memories of my grandmother, Ramona, in a place called El Fanguito, which means little mud flats. And there were no projects in Puerto Rico then. I'm in my 70s, so I'm going way back. And what people, poor people did, and there was about 40,000 people living in poverty there, they would put slats into the mud and into the ocean, and then they would build shacks on those platforms that they built. So as a child, I walked on these bridges, wooden narrow bridges that went over the water into, you know, pathways that led to the various shacks. As I said, there were 40,000. And my grandmother Ramona lived there and raised 8 children. Her husband had left her with the 8 children, and my mother was one of them. So you'd think I would have awful memories of a shack with no running water, no toilet. Everybody urinated and defecated in the water. And when you walked on those planks, you had to be really careful. And I don't. I have loving, wonderful memories of my grandmother. And the reason, I think, is because, and I learned something from that, which I'll mention in a minute, my grandmother would make chicken soup. And I remember once when she went under the house to get a chicken and pulled its neck, she would make fresh chicken soup. Then for dessert, out of the egg whites, she would make meringue. You've eaten lemon meringue pie with just the meringue. So I felt I was at the Ritz. You know, I had this big bowl of chicken soup and this wonderful bowl of meringue. And I was the oldest grandchild. So it was just, she treated me special. And I have loving memories. But what I learned from her is you don't need a lot to do a lot. That sort of was ingrained in me. She had nothing, and yet she prepared this wonderful meal. She had nothing, and she raised 8 children. She had nothing, and she was happy there. Her attitude was, let me provide for you so you can have a better life. And I think that that, to me, has been my life's lesson, which is, you know, when people say, I need more money, I need more people, I just smile and look at them and say, what can you do with what you have? You can do a lot often.
Dr. Nunez, you went from there to being the president of Eastern. How did you find Eastern? And What made you feel prepared to take on the role as president there?
I think the listening audience would agree with me that often in life things happen that you don't plan for. But many years before I became president, I visited a friend at the system office, which is in Hartford. That's the central office. I wasn't here. I was in New York as vice chancellor. And that was Estela Lopez. And she was the provost for the entire system. And we always went out to lunch with a third friend. So at one of those lunches, she said, "You know, Elsa, I know the perfect university for you where you should be president someday." At that time, I was number two. As I said, I was vice chancellor in CUNY. And I said, "What?" And she said, "Eastern Connecticut State." I said, "Oh, I don't want to be president of Eastern Connecticut State. I wanted to stay in New York, you know." And I just dismissed it. And then, as life would have it, my husband became president of Northeastern University in Boston, so we moved up. I had to leave New York because we didn't want to split household. And when I moved to New England, then I began to decide, what am I going to do? And I applied for two jobs, Framingham State, which is in Massachusetts, and Eastern. And Eastern came forward with an offer, and I took it. And everyone said I was so lucky to be at Eastern because at that time, the state was investing a lot of money in higher education.
That is very true, because the Eastern that people see today does not look like the Eastern of 20 years ago.
No.
My father was doing a continuing ed degree in that era, and the campus has grown exponentially, new buildings, and those were investments that were made around the start of your presidency.
Yes.
So when you inherited the university in 2006, what did it look like? Not just physically, but as far as budget, as far as staffing and other resources. And what were some of the challenges that you sought to address with your abilities 18 years ago?
I always like to start, Morgan, with the fact that I succeeded a successful president, Dr. David Carter. And I think it's wrong when you come into a job and you erase what was done before you or you don't honor it. And I've always honored his presidency. He was an amazing man in many ways, and he had a wonderful relationship with the legislature. And he was considered, you know, part of the good old boys network. In those days, that's how business was done. So he was able to generate funding for the new building at Eastern, which was the J.L.C. Young building, the administrative building, and also some money for a new library. In those days, you didn't have to go through the system office. You didn't have to go through the bureaucracy. He went right to the legislature. Today, presidents have to go through the system office. And so he was able to get money for Eastern when everybody was asleep at the wheel. Nobody was doing what he was doing. So when I entered Eastern, there was fundamentally a good infrastructure. He paid attention to buildings. That was his strength. And so I continued that, but I'm an academic. So I was able to say, look, I've got this potential. How do I take this potential and really raise it to another level? And so I focused in part on the buildings and grounds, but I also focused on the academic core.
Let's talk about the academics first. I know that was something that you were very adamant about, improving and growing and maintaining the excellence that had been there in the decades before your time. So could you talk about how academics have grown during your leadership at Eastern?
Well, I'm smiling, and the audience that's listening can't see me because I remember people walking into my office as a new president saying, "Oh, we got to do marketing." I looked at these people once and I said, "What are you going to market? What are you marketing? We're not that great yet, you know?" And so the focus then became, how do we get from where we are to a level of excellence? And the markers are in U.S. News and World Report. Presidents don't like U.S. News and World Report when you rank low. We love it when you rank high. And that's what happened over time. Eastern became number one in New England. And the markers are class size, student-faculty ratio, how much are you investing in the infrastructure. All the markers, the variables, rather, that they use are good variables. There's only one people criticize a lot, and I agree with the criticism, which is your peer opinion. So sometimes your peers will – not sometimes. Your peers do have a say in your ranking, and sometimes that's subjective. If you put that aside, all the other variables are very strong. And so I began to work on those variables, which meant hire more faculty so you could have a smaller group of students to every full-time faculty member. The class sizes, I brought them all down to under 20. We have a few that are over 40, but nothing like UConn, where there's 400 and 500 people in a class. And the ones that are over 40, I think, is a handful right now. So students, when you get a letter of recommendation to go to medical school or law school or graduate school, it's written by your professors. It's not written by a TA, a graduate assistant. The professors really know the students, and that's why our going to professional and graduate school ratios and numbers are so strong. And I think that one of the things that I really wanted to emphasize was Eastern had to shift from being a commuter school and break the pack. So you have Southern, Western, and Central, and Eastern were all commuter schools. We broke out of the pack and became Connecticut's only public liberal arts college. And by doing that, we became residential. So we recruit from the entire state and out of state, where the other three do some recruitment out of state, but their catchment areas are their regions. We're not a regional school. We're a state school. So that meant that I had a bigger pool of students to recruit from. There was more diversity at Eastern because they came from different parts of the state, different parts of the country. And more importantly, the life of the campus shifted from everybody going home after class to everybody wanting more activities, more parties, more clubs, more organizations. And so all of that lifted the academic reputation of Eastern. Our honors program became one of the strongest in the state. Our admission standards are almost the same as UConn. And it's what we call now at Eastern proudly, it's an elite institution that is not elitist.
It's funny how you mentioned UConn, which is only like, what, 10, 15 miles away, if
yes.
that. And somebody might say, well, how can Eastern compete with UConn or vice versa? But the offerings are totally different at the two schools. Could you talk about the difference?
Everybody knows that a liberal arts college started as Harvard College. And in those days, it was a man, only men attended. It was a man's school. And the men studied philosophy, science, literature, religion, and those were the basis of a liberal arts education. And people think sometimes liberal means like political liberal. It doesn't. It refers to, in the Latin, artes liberales, which means the liberating of the mind, basically. You study to learn, and your mind opens up to all of this knowledge. And so Eastern, by becoming Connecticut's only public liberal arts college, not only broke the pack by being primarily residential, but we're small. So I have many students who apply to UConn but come to Eastern because when they go to UConn, it's too big for them. UConn is a fantastic institution. It's a research one, has fabulous faculty, administrators, and staff, but it's not for everybody. There are people who want to walk across campus. You know, they don't want to drive. They want to walk across, a short walk, and they want to say hi to everybody. So I think that competing with UConn was never in our cards. We knew we couldn't, but we knew we could. So we picked the matters on which we could compete very well, and we've done well. And often I'll bump into students who'll say, I transferred from UConn.
I want to bring everybody to more recent years, Dr. Nunez. She is the retiring president of Eastern Connecticut State University. So happy to be sitting down with her and talking about her time at Eastern. In more recent years, we've had a completely different challenge to address, COVID-19. I remember watching your video that you had released at the time addressing students after having sent everybody home. Those were some very difficult and dark days. How did you guys navigate them?
Yeah, it was a major challenge of my presidency. And I want to say that anytime you're a leader, you have to look behind you and you see this wonderful team that's backing you. And I have a wonderful team at Eastern. Every vice president, every dean, every director, everybody came to the table with, this is not about us. This is about the students and the institution. Because if we had not made the numbers work financially, we could be bankrupt today. So there was a financial interest that COVID threatened, in addition to the academic interests of our students, which we knew we didn't want them to lose ground. So at the beginning, everybody was, you know, scared, and people just wanted to go home and hunker down. And we did that the first semester. If you remember, it was in the middle of that spring semester. Everybody just went home and we were completely online. But that's contrary to what our mission is. And I would say to people, we cannot bring them back in September and have everybody be in their bedrooms at home, you know, online. That's not Eastern. And so we quickly pivoted it to what we call a split modality, which was hybrid. And it was interesting. I made the wise investment of investing in technology, not because I was smart, but because I had a smart CIO. And he told me that I should invest in a technology called lecture capture. At that time, it was done so that if students missed class, they could go and see the lecture repeated, you know, through technology, and they could benefit from that review as well, even if they had gone to class. And so then we decided that we could use this technology in the following way. So Morgan is teaching philosophy, and he would have 20 students in his course, let's say. 10 of them would be in your class, and 10 of them would be in their dorm room on Tuesday. And the 10 that were in your class were all separated. Their desks, you know, we had all the separation. People came in and cleaned. Everybody had masks on. And then those 10 on Thursday, your second day of class, would be in the dorms, and the other 10 would be in the classroom. But the ones in the dorms could hear you and see you because of the technology. So you were online, you know, but it wasn't the same as being home in your bedroom online. You were online, but you were going to class once a week face to face with the professor. And that saved our bacon. We were able to continue with very high retention rates, and students, they developed what we called a pod socially. And we said, pick four people, five people that you know, that you like and respect, and that becomes your pod. You can eat with them, you can go out with them, you can do anything, but you cannot go outside your pod. The four or five would stay together, have dinner together, take off their masks if they were in the dormitory rooms. That was allowed. And all of that was the team of student affairs people, the academics, the faculty, all came together, and we survived it. Financially, we didn't miss a beat.
And technology going forward, could you talk about how that, not necessarily talking about COVID, but how is technology impacting education in today's world? It is growing at such a rapid rate.
I'm careful. I don't invest in every new thing because I know that it's going to be cheaper in a couple of years. So I'm not stupid. I say to people, that's wonderful that everybody's using it, but let's just wait a little while, because sometimes it'll evolve into something else, or it just, the price goes down, as you know. And so we are able to make major investments in technology, and that goes from software to special ways in which to protect the integrity of the databases and make sure that we're not being hacked, all of that security. We put a lot of money into security. And so from our perspective, it is really important that we use technology, especially now with artificial intelligence, to benefit the students. However, having said that, you know that everybody's on their iPhone all the time. So we're discouraging that. We can't tell you never to use your phone, but we're encouraging people to be face-to-face with each other, to socialize with each other, to be a part of a friendship circle, as opposed to always being on your phone. So technology is fantastic, but there are limits.
I want to say that you're not a hypocrite. You forgot your phone intentionally. You left it in the car before you came in.
Yeah, because I knew if it went off, it would interrupt the interview. And so I love my phone, but I know when to leave it in the car.
Dr. Nunez, talking about Eastern after you've left, which is coming up before you know it, what are some future opportunities that Eastern has? And what would you recommend your replacement consider?
Yes, and my replacement will be named shortly. It's going to be wonderful because the pool was so strong. There were 110 people applied for my job, and that's pretty good because it's a very the criteria for qualifying is pretty strong. So that 110 people thought they were qualified speaks volumes about the university. And they have now selected a small pool, and from that those finalists, they're selecting the person who will be the next president. I think the next president, like I did, has enormous potential ahead of them. I think that I did what I could in my almost 20 years. I think I advanced Eastern in many ways. But I think the next president can do more. We need desperately a new sports center. We need a new academic building. And so the new president will have to advocate for those resources for Eastern from Governor Lamont and the system office. Infrastructure is really important. Students won't come if the place looks like a dump. They won't. We really, really need a new sports center. You know, our team, baseball team, was ranked number one in the nation 2 years ago. And we've won baseball championships, national championships, you know, consecutively many years. And so in order to maintain that and have coaches that want to come to Eastern, that sports center is vital for Eastern. On the academic side, there's so much potential for new majors, cutting edge, you know, things are moving faster than we can speak. And so making sure that we offer the programs that are in line with a liberal arts education, you know, that make you think critically, speak clearly, write clearly. We have ethical reasoning is one of our criteria. All of those programs that carry those learning outcomes can be developed into new programs and new majors. And the faculty is very creative in doing that. And then finally, I would say that there's enormous opportunity at Eastern for building a more national reputation. I think that may take a name change. I don't think people would come to a school nationally Eastern, but if it was named, it had a different name, people would might associate it with a different kind of institution. And because it's liberal arts, they might even think it's a private liberal arts, even though it's public. So I think there's potential there for national recruitment as well.
I did want to ask you about the state budget, which we have seen has been or will be perhaps challenging in coming years. But this is not the first time that we have necessarily seen this in Connecticut or in other states for that matter. So as a leader, as a president, if you see the words or the phrases tuition increases or program cuts in headlines, what do you say to yourself? Because you do go to the Capitol and you do lobby for more resources, for more funding, for new buildings, etc. So how do you shape that in your mind as a leader to make sure that the university itself is successful if we do have a challenging budget year or period?
Well, first, let me start by thanking the listeners, your taxpayers. I pay taxes, Morgan, you pay taxes, everybody listening pays taxes. And those taxes, in part, go to our base budget. And so for every $10 I spend, $3 come from the taxpayers and $7 come from the students' tuition. So when you tell me don't raise tuition, I say to you, where would you like me to get the money to pay everybody at Eastern? People that cut the grass, people that teach, people that support the library. Everybody has to get paid. And these salaries are competitive. It's not like you could pay low minimum wage and get a fine faculty. You have to be competitive in the market. And so it is really important that the listeners know how much we appreciate the tax base that you give us. However, it's not enough. And so if it's only $3 out of 10 and I have to get the other seven, that's when I go to the student body, particularly the Student Government Association, the SGA, and say to them, you have a choice. Either I cut and have a balanced budget or I raise tuition and have a balanced budget. If I cut, I could end up with schlock you, right? You keep cutting and cutting an institution. You can't compete with UConn. You can't compete with Wellesley. You can't compete with Wesleyan. You can't compete with the better schools because you're going to be mediocre. And so you cut yourself to mediocrity. What does that do for the citizens of Connecticut? People want to have good state schools where they can send their children. Right now, you send a child to, let's say, Bates, which is private, and you're paying close to $90,000 a year. You send them to Eastern, it's $27,000 and change. That's all in. That's with tuition, room, board, and fees and everything. It's a lot of money. Granted, I would say to the listeners, of course it's a lot of money. However, it's not the $80,000 at a private school. So our listeners need great public higher education. And you can't have that if you're not investing. So my pitch always to the legislature is please increase our budget so I will raise tuition, but not by 5%. Let me raise it by 2%. And when we use percentages, it skews the discussion because when I raise it by 5%, that means it's $1,000 for students who live on campus and $500 for people who don't live on campus. But people think somehow 5% is $5,000. And so I never use percentages. I always use numbers so that people understand I am raising it, but it's usually by $800 or $900 that I raise it.
Dr. Nudius, I did want to ask you, when Dr. Carter, who you mentioned earlier, left, he left a note for you on what became your desk in the president's office at Eastern. Are you going to do that for the person who takes your position? And what are some of the things you may say in there?
Well, I'm not going to leave a note. I'll leave my phone number and say to the person, if you ever want to talk about anything in confidence, you know, without fear that someone would criticize you or judge you or have something negative to say, call me. I'm going to be at Harvard. I got an appointment to Harvard. And so I'll be teaching public policy there. So I'll be available to the next person. What happens with a new president, it's usually only in the first year that you might have a question or two. So you can imagine walking into an institution with thousands and thousands of students, thousands and thousands of employees, and not having a friend. You know, you're new, you don't trust everybody, you don't know anybody, you can't say everything you really think. So it's important that I make myself available. I don't expect that the person would call me a lot, but I would expect that if they're in a jam, you know, meaning conceptually, you know, they're thinking something through and they have to make a decision and they just want it run by someone, that I would be available for that.
Dr. Nunez, thanks for coming on Face Connecticut with me.
You're welcome.
And congratulations.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.